Hi everyone, and welcome to our EY Careers Uncovered podcast series. Over the next few weeks, we're going to be focusing on school leavers and apprenticeship opportunities. I'm Verity Pope, and I'm part of the UK employer brand team. EY is a professional services organisation that helps companies make better decisions about business, finance and technology. How? By asking better questions to help us all build a better working world and to create long-term value for our people, clients and society. This podcast series is here to cover a range of topics around apprenticeships, belonging at EY, what it's like working in the regional offices, and embracing the new normal that is a virtual working world. It's important to know that when we recorded these podcasts, the United Kingdom went into another national lockdown, so all of our people are working from home. Our people and apprentices will be sharing their stories in their own words, and I hope each episode leaves you feeling inspired to consider an apprenticeship opportunity with us. In today's episode, we're chatting all about the new normal of the working world, and that's working from home, working remotely, and making an impact in a virtual environment. We'll be speaking with Matthew Piper, 2018 Strategy and Transactions Business Apprentice based in Edinburgh, and Lauren Castles, 2018 Degree Apprentice in Business Leadership and Management based in Newcastle. Our apprentices today will be sharing all their insights and experiences of having to adapt to working full-time and studying for their professional qualification virtually. And they give us their views on how to make an impact in their team and in the organisation all from home. Welcome to both of you. Thanks for joining me today on our apprenticeship podcast series. Just wanted to start by asking how you are. In the current climate that we're recording this, as we have gone just back into a national lockdown. So just wondering how you're feeling right now.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a tough one, definitely, because as I'm sure everybody feels the same, this lockdown is mapping out to be a little bit more difficult than the first one because it's not as new and don't really want to use the word exciting, but it's definitely not as unknown territory. Yeah. And it's definitely different in some ways, but I think in terms of more work perspective stuff, it's a lot easier because there's a lot more familiarity in terms of roles and responsibilities and how to really effectively speak with your team and clients as well. So from that perspective, I would say it's a bit easier because everybody's kind of established in that process now. But I'm definitely missing being in the office and being with colleagues and clients and whatnot.
Yeah, I think the same. It's now that everyone's sort of gotten used to the working from home, it's definitely a lot easier to work and collaborate with the rest of the team and the, not just sort of the local team, just also like the national team as well.
Yeah.
Something which we didn't really do much of before. It's sort of limited to occasional projects, but now it's far, far easier to work with colleagues from all across the country.
Matthew, where else is your team based?
So we span both the Scotland offices, or the two main Scotland offices of Glasgow and Edinburgh, but also we're in London, Manchester, Birmingham, Leeds, and I think Bristol. So we have spread across pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, on the points that you've said, like, I completely agree. Like, the project that I'm working on at the moment with one of the high street banks, and we've got teams based in Newcastle, obviously, but we're also working with teams in London and India. Sort of, it's those kind of scenarios where really working from home or working in the office hasn't really impacted it too much because there's so much connectivity between the teams anyway, even within normal EY practices where you are based in the office, that we were kind of fortunate that we did rely on this kind of infrastructure and systems to get a lot of work done anyway.
So for anyone new to EY, for anyone listening that hasn't heard of EY before, can you tell us a bit about yourself and the apprenticeship programme that you're on with EY?
So the apprenticeship programme that I'm on is a little bit unique because it's a three-year degree programme where we go into the university in normal circumstances, physically into the university one day a week and study the degree programme from 9 till 5. And then we'll go back into the office Tuesday or Friday and sort of work within our normal teams. So for me, that is the financial crime team, and we'll work with banks to review their policies and carry out any work, ensure that it's all compliant with the regulator. So it is a little bit unique in the format in terms of not sort of having blocks of studies. It is throughout the year that we'd be studying. which personally I find is quite a big advantage, because it sort of gives you the opportunity to apply the learning from the apprenticeship scheme in real time. We are fortunate enough to have the Chartered Management qualification built into the degree. So at the end of the programme, it would be a degree qualification and a Chartered Management status.
And Matthew, what about you? Tell me a bit about your role at EY and the apprenticeship that you're on.
Yeah, so I'm on the business apprenticeship. So it's a 4.5 year scheme, cool. Or about 4.5 years. And we study towards the ICAS qualification. So it's the Institute of Chartered Accountants for Scotland. Alternatively, some of the other apprentices study towards the Institute of Chartered Accountants for England and Wales qualification. Mm-hmm. So it's a 4.5 year course. And we sort of sit exams sort of in individual sort of pairs over the 4.5 years.
And which office are you based in?
Edinburgh.
And how has that been?
Yeah, I actually moved from Kent up to Edinburgh to join EY.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so we moved a very long way. And it's been great. Edinburgh's such a nice place to be in.
And so are you still in Edinburgh then, Matthew? Did you relocate back to Kent or have you stayed in Edinburgh?
Yeah, so I'm back at my parents now. But I don't know whether lucky or unlucky, just before lockdown, I came down here and then my mum had symptoms. So I actually was sort of isolated down in Kent before lockdown was effective.
Right.
And then lockdown came in, so I was sort of...
And how did you find that relocation then, Matthew? Because obviously, how old were you when you joined? That's a big change. That's a big move, pretty much from one side of the country to the other on a relocation. How did you find that?
It was nerve-wracking for sure. Like moving away from my parents at 18. So I had a previous job before, but it was a part-time job. So moving hundreds of miles away, starting a full-time job, starting the professional exams, it was quite daunting.
Yeah.
But luckily there was, like, I moved in with a couple of other flatmates, like a few of the flatmates were EY apprentices as well.
Great.
So who were on the same scheme but in audit. So that definitely helped. It meant that the four of us were all going through the same things. We went to college together and it was a bit of a support network.
How did you come to think of Edinburgh?
It was mainly just looking at what was available at the time and trying to, cities which were available, I probably all would have been fine with, but Edinburgh just sounded the best option. It's one of the nicest cities in the country, so you're never going to get that wrong really with Edinburgh, and it's definitely been a good choice.
I have to say I'm your biggest advocate, Matthew. I did the same after university, and after university I joined a graduate scheme in Edinburgh, and it has a piece of my heart. Hopefully you can get back soon. And so, Matthew, you said you're on the Level 7 Business Apprenticeship. Can you tell me a bit about that particular apprenticeship itself? Because obviously Lauren's talked about her degree apprenticeship and that format. So can you talk a bit about the Level 7 Apprenticeship and how that works?
Yeah, so it's 12 exams for the ICAS qualification. I think it's 15 for ICAW. And you take exams every probably 3 or 4 months, or a couple of exams every few months.
Yeah.
And you sit them with the grads as well. So the graduates, they're doing the same exams, just in a slightly different timing, because theirs is a bit more of a shortened period. So it means that you not only do you have the apprenticeship network, you have the wider grad network as well, which definitely helps, because you've got more people who you can help out with.
Yeah.
But it's quite a long scheme at times, because it is, as I said, 4.5 years. But it means at the age of sort of 22, 23 years, I'll be a chartered accountant, which if I were to go through the degree route, it would probably be sort of 6 or 7 years to get from leaving school to the CA. So it's definitely worth it. And the sort of the difficulties of being like 18, 19 and taking these exams is definitely worth it, I think, when I can qualify and get the CA mark after my name.
Absolutely. I agree. I think it's a fabulous route and sounds like you're doing really well. And what about those exams? How are you finding two at a time when those exams come?
It can be quite intense at times, because they're not easy exams. Like, they're the hardest exams I've sat in my life. But the key, I think, for me is just starting early enough and just being sort of committed and just making sure that I'm not leaving it until the last minute.
Would you say the same, Lauren, from a degree apprenticeship perspective?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so the format of the assessments and whatnot is slightly different to Matthew's. So on the degree apprenticeship scheme, we have just assessments. So it's kind of like coursework rather than exams. So per each module, there could either be like one or two reports that you've got to produce on the topic. But I think the biggest benefit for me is that all of the topics are contextualised for EY. And we also get, Matthew, you might get this as well, but our study leave works where it's 20% of our total contracted hours with EY minus the days that we'll spend at university. We get the remaining balance of days, which I think works out at about 20 or 25 days a year to take as study leave. So we can allocate them around our sort of, you do have that additional time aside from your everyday role to really focus on the academic side of it and achieving the best mark rate can.
Absolutely. And I guess obviously this week, our topic that we're talking about is virtual environment and kind of everything that we're doing is remotely. We're working together remotely, we're working with clients remotely, and obviously you guys are studying remotely as well. So how do you balance it?
Well, I think sort of, as I've mentioned with the study days, that is definitely a huge part about how personally I balance it. I think as well, we're quite fortunate on the programme that the study blocks are structured and they don't change. So it is every Monday, 9 or 5. And then our working days are Tuesday or Friday. So it's quite easy to like forecast what time you do have on any given week to dedicate to either the academic side or sort of to everyday work. Yeah. And of course, there's counsellors as well. So if we do get a little bit sort of stuck on how to manage a lot of deadlines in one sort of chunk of time, there's a lot of support there that we can reach out to, sort of evaluate what priorities are and sort of seek out advice on how best, like more senior figures within the business, when they've came across the same instances, they've managed that time.
Cool. And you, Matthew, what have you done to kind of, you know, balance that living through a computer screen, new life?
Yeah, I think a lot of it just comes back to sort of planning in advance. So like different to Lauren, but my exams are a bit more sort of blocked. They're sort of, there's only about 2 or 3 a year, like timing. So it's sort of, you have times when you don't have any exams, you don't have to worry about exams at all, which at the moment I'm in, my next exam's not until sort of the end of summer. Cool. So at the moment I just don't have to worry about exams whatsoever. But when it comes around to exams, for my next exam, for my next 2 exams, I get 5 weeks off, just block time off beforehand. Right. So then I know that when it comes to the end of July, I don't have to worry about exams, I don't have to worry about work whatsoever. But I mean, sort of in the month or so leading up to it, I know to sort of communicate to my team, I'm off in a month's time or I'm off in a few weeks' time, and just to sort of reduce the workload a bit and make sure that there's nothing which I'm going to be needed on.
You've both talked about your team a lot and communication with your team, which I just think is absolutely integral in these times, especially when we are all in separate places. Can you tell me a bit more about how your teams have kind of adapted in this new normal that we're working in? What kind of things do you do?
So in terms of the team that I'm working at the moment, obviously we run like quizzes and whatnot, which sort of is there to kind of keep up the motivation and the connectivity. Yeah. But one point that I think is really important to discuss is sort of the wider teams as well, in which Matthew touched on earlier, in terms of sort of national teams and international teams for that matter, which I think has actually really taken off throughout this period. Yeah. So an example that probably sticks in my mind is just a few days ago, I was able to attend a virtual conference with the team in the Netherlands, and it was all about sort of risk model management and that kind of thing. And it's conferences like that a lot of teams might run face to face with clients and with their own internal teams. But through this virtual environment, we've been able to increase the connectivity and share the knowledge more on a global scale. And really make those connections and relationships, which I think as a team, like I say, both locally and internationally is.
Yeah, and from my team up, our team has always been split between Edinburgh and Glasgow. So we work as like the Scotland Central Belt. So we've always had like weekly calls amongst both sort of offices. But now in lockdown, we've had sort of once a week, we've had like a work one where we've actually been discussing work-related matters. But we also have on a Thursday evening what we call the Landlord's Hypertech, which is a play on sort of restructuring. But we often do like quizzes in there, or we've had water, gin and rum tasting once. Okay. We had a chocolate tasting. So like we do quite a lot of sort of social events just to keep everyone sort of touched to talk to them. So it's definitely been good to have these calls where you see the wider team and you get to know, or you get to sort of keep chatting with them.
Completely agree. Just because sort of in a similar way to you, Matthew, we work in projects. So we'd have like project socials, like midway through projects or to celebrate ending a project, or we'd have like summer barbecues. We were actually going to have a quite big spring party last year at a really nice venue in Newcastle, and that obviously had to be postponed. So there was a lot of social events in the calendar, and really it's trying to make up for that virtually to keep the relationship sort of going, because something that you do take for granted when you're in the office, I think, like just even bumping into somebody in the kitchen and chatting with them. It's just simple things like that, really, that I think are definitely missed. But it's just trying to find exciting ways to do that through a virtual environment.
And what about your leadership team? How have they adapted?
So for us, we've had sort of department-wide calls, and it was actually a quite nice little sort of initiative that was run. And just prior to Christmas, we actually all got little hampers delivered to our houses.
Amazing.
So we could select like little, you could select obviously if you wanted like a little bottle of wine, or if you wanted a little bottle of like high-end pop and that kind of thing. So it was really nice to have that, and sort of feel like that you were still like part of the wider team, and that like you were all connected in that way. And that was something from leadership, which was definitely appreciated across the full department, because like I say, it's a new way of having to sort of work with the team and still feel connected.
Yeah, similarly, like in the restructuring leadership, we got hampers sent around. I think locally we had hampers sent around, and then nationally they organised sort of, a few options of sort of subscriptions. Yeah, cool. So there was like a 3-month wine subscription available, I think 6-month chocolate one.
Wow.
Like a magazine, 12-month magazine. Yeah, so you could choose one of them, and like my wine one came today, so definitely looking forward to it.
Amazing.
So yeah, small sort of gestures like that definitely make you feel appreciated in the bigger firm.
Nuggets of recognition, absolutely. I think what students would be really keen to know about is they're learning, they're on the kind of the program, it's a virtual working environment, hopefully not for too much longer, but how would they make an impact? How are you guys making an impact in this current climate that we're living in at the moment? Can you kind of share any insights?
Working virtually, I'll be honest, you've just got to really leverage that, because really, if anything, working virtually gives you more possibilities to make an impact. So for example, where you would normally, I don't know, if you wanted to sort of get to know someone in the team, or if you wanted to understand someone's role a bit better, you could just say, oh, could we grab a coffee or that kind of thing, just have a quick catch up. Whereas now virtually, that isn't limited to where people are based. So you could get into contact with anybody in the firm and say, oh, would you like, can we just grab a virtual coffee? And it's a lot more normal of an approach to take now. So for me, I think making an impact, if anything, is actually easier, because you've got so many more resources, and people where they would previously be based in different offices, and they could have virtual coffees then, now it is a lot more normal, and you've got anybody who's sat at the other end of the laptop within reach of having a catch up with, or getting to know their role and sort of understanding how you can develop your skills and knowledge with their experience as well. And I think further to that, with a lot of the like online learning platforms that EY provides, the sort of internal qualifications that you can get, and all of that kind of stuff is available virtually. You're not limited to having to sort of to wait until you can have a face-to-face teaching session.
Yeah, or go to like a conference or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can complete EY badges in any sector or any skill, really, and they are highly recognised both from like internal perspectives and by clients as well. Not something that are limited by virtual work, and I don't think anyway.
Cool. Are you doing any badges?
I just completed the bronze badge in corporate banking. And great. That was just because one of the projects that I was working on was sort of surrounded on a concept that I wasn't too familiar with. And it was just something that I wanted to know more about and found out a lot more through the badge. And it's just really helped with sort of bettering the client relationships and improving sort of what kind of work I can get involved in within the project.
What kind of things do you do to switch off? What can you do? What do you enjoy doing?
So yeah. One thing that I've more recently started trying to sort of like personal development books, which is something that previously I probably would have been like, there's no way I'm like gonna like sit in the house, read a book for an hour every single evening. But you do find that sort of you've got to find different releases to differentiate that working day and sort of just your free time. So now that there is literally pretty much nothing else to do other than find something within the confines of your own house, reading is something that I've actually refound my love for.
There's a running club in the village which I was a member of before I moved to Scotland, when I was living here and still at school, but now being back here I've rejoined the running club. Now I normally run sort of once or twice a week, and I've really enjoyed just going out. It's quite a social running club, and it's sort of quite laid back as well, so it's not really intense or really sort of competitive. It's just, you know, it's a sort of 5-8k casual run on a Wednesday evening or a Sunday evening, which has been really enjoyable. And actually, unfortunately, with the official like the full lockdown, it's not running at the moment, but I'm still getting out sort of a couple of times a week to run, just run around the village, run around sort of the countryside, which has definitely been really good.
Getting that vitamin D definitely where you can.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you say a casual 8K run?
Casual 8K?
8K.
Not a casual.
8K is fairly.
That's not even a casual walk for me. And I think like the application process, you guys did an application process. I know part of it was kind of, you know, online and stuff like that. But the application process this year has obviously moved to virtual all the way through. And speaking to you guys, it sounds like you've got a lot of experience, you know, working in that virtual environment and the new normal. What advice and insights would you give to students that are going through that? How can they prepare and how can they stand out?
Good, regardless whether it's virtual or not, is just be yourself. A lot of the times we've talked today is we've mentioned our teams, we mentioned the people at EY, and it's one of the biggest selling points to join EY that the people and the teams you join are very normally like extremely good, and you can create quite strong friendships and bonds with the team. So a lot of the time sort of personalities and sort of just being yourself and sort of your interests and hobbies are what sells you. A lot of people are very smart. A lot of people are sort of have strong academics, have, you know, people are clever, and a lot of people who join EY are very intelligent, but it's the outside of work things which sort of round you out and are sort of the key differentials between candidates. So yeah, just try and sell yourself and sell the sort of non-academic side of you as best as possible. Probably the best piece of advice for me.
I agree. I think sort of like putting your personality across and showing like the interests and the hobbies that you have personally is such a huge valuable point that you could put across in the interview process. Because even when you join EY, it's not all sort of focused on the corporate role. Like for example, in Newcastle we've got the Women's Network, you've got such a huge selection of like religion networks. There's all sorts that you can get involved in. So in terms of once you're into EY as well, like Matthew was saying, sort of the culture isn't just right, heads down, involved in your own role, sort of you just have to do this task and that's it, that's your role finished. It really goes further than that, and it's not just about sort of being who you think would fit into a corporate 9-to-5 everyday role. It really is understanding sort of the culture of EY and the impact that you can make as the person you are, not the person you think would be suitable for a potential role.
Is there anything you wish you'd known before you joined that you know now?
For me, I think probably just not necessarily something that I wish I'd known, but I wish within myself I was a bit more sort of understanding that I wasn't going to go into the role and know like every single like sort of part of it. You've got to understand that you're not expected to come into the role and know every single area of it and be the best of the best in that particular role, because that's just impossible. So I would say sort of the most important thing, if I could go back 2 years, if I was going to sort of tell myself, is just to be as receptive to learning throughout the full career, really. And something that I'm still like wanting to develop in is just really like leveraging the skills of the people that I'm surrounded by and leveraging the skills of everybody that I meet throughout EY to sort of better my understanding of the role as well.
Just asking silly questions. Like, the team would much rather you ask a question and then you get it right rather than you guess and then get it wrong and then trying to then fix any issues. So yeah, definitely just ask a silly question. And it, also that the team, everyone was a new joiner at one point, so everyone's experienced what you're going through at some point in their careers, even though it may be sort of 20, 30 years ago for some people.
Thank you so much for chatting with me. I think it's been so insightful. You make virtual working sound fun. So thank you so much. And just have a fabulous rest of 2021. And I really hope that one day we'll meet face to face.
If you've enjoyed listening to today's episode, find out more about our apprenticeship opportunities at ey.com/UK/apprentices.